Today I'd like to look at something that seems to present a conundrum, because most of us tend to hold some combination of two stands when it comes to do-overs. By do-overs, I mean the slips or mistakes we make that we sometimes think cannot be corrected. There are other things that we do, and right away we ask for forgiveness and go about correcting the error. Have you ever wondered where we got the idea that some things are forgivable and correctable, while others are best left alone because we can't go backwards? Most poets, historians, and soothsayers have commented on the fact that once something has been done, it is written in stone and will forever either haunt us or leave us better for having experienced the situation. Let's take a look at something that a friend of mine has been quoting to me for decades. This is an excerpt from a work called The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam by Edward Fitzgerald. It is a translation from Persian to English of a selection of quatrains, which are four-line poems, attributed to Omar Khayyam, a mathematician who lived from 1048 to 1131 of the Common Era, and is also called the astronomer poet of Persia, Persia being the ancient name for Iran. Quatrain number 71 reads, "The moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. Nor all your piety nor wit shall lure it back to cancel half a line. Nor all your tears wash out a word of it." For those who think that we are responsible for our mistakes, and once we've done something, we cannot ever go back and make things right, this is a very convenient post to hang our hats on. As I said earlier, most of us use this when we either don't want to acknowledge a mistake or we think it's too horrendous for forgiveness. Otherwise, we're confident that God will forgive everything except blasphemy. Is God all forgiving? Or do we sometimes feel that there are things that can never be erased? Do we ever get a redo? Or is everything a one-time shot? And if we don't get it right, we're forever under a curse, otherwise known as karma. Let's take a look at what the Bible has to say about forgiveness and do-overs. Is our Creator a God of second chances? In the Message Bible, we read in Ezekiel 18:21, "But a wicked person who turns his back on that life of sin and keeps all my statutes, living a just and righteous life, he'll live. Really live. He won't die. I won't keep a list of all the things he did wrong. He will live." And in verse 23, "Do you think I take any pleasure in the death of wicked men and women? Isn't it my pleasure that they turn around, no longer living wrong, but living right? Really living?" And 1 Timothy 2 tells us, "I urge then, first of all, that requests, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for everyone, for kings and all those in authority." This would include even the presidents and prime ministers that we may not agree with, "that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. This is good and pleases God our Savior." In verse 4, who wants all men and women, everyone, to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. That even includes figures like Hitler. To cement the idea, we read in Matthew 18:14, Jesus, when he held up a little child as an example of what our attitude should be, he said, "In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish." That makes me think about little Theo. And in 2 Peter 3:9, "The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you." Not slow, patient. "Not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance." Notice that it's not only those who are special, or those who have asked for forgiveness, or who are ashamed of something they've done, who belong to a special club with do-over rights. Everyone has equal opportunity to be forgiven and have their slate wiped clean, so that no trace of the errors of the past remain. The very cornerstone of our religion, the crucifixion of Jesus the Christ, guarantees that we are equal partners in the forgiveness that he came to accomplish. In Isaiah 53:5, "But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed." The finger that writes does not set the absolute future for anyone. I heard something just recently that really settled for me the fact that we are part of an incredibly complex and intertwined creation. The person said, "Whenever you think about, speak to, encourage, or diminish someone, remember that that person contains a part of the essence of God. Yet seeing that in them is not as important as if they see that in you and me." Isn't that kind of scary? There's a whole lot of responsibility in our connection to the universe. We need only go back and look at the heroines and heroes of the Bible who represent our existence to understand how very much God is a God of second chances. What happened with the first two original humans? They had everything, but they wanted to taste the forbidden fruit. Totally in defiance of what their Creator had said, they reasoned away their chance of passing on all that was good, peaceful, plentiful, and harmonious. The story is that instead of washing his hands of them and saying, "That's it, you blew it, end of humans," and that would have been the end of our story too, the Creator said, "I'm going to close the gates of paradise to you, and you will have to work hard, suffer much, and see your children murder each other as you eke out a subsistence from the earth." That must have been devastating to them. Yet they were given a do-over. We've learned that God didn't desert them. He stayed with them for nearly 1,000 years. They were given time to make the best of what they had engineered as their own inheritance. And what about Noah? He He was saved along with his family, totaling 8 individuals. Because we have 8 people in our immediate family too. The future of all of humanity, again, rested on one family. And Noah was no example of a perfect, upstanding father. But he did get a do-over and was the one from whom everyone after the flood traces their genealogy. Then we have Abraham and Sarah. God made them a promise that their descendants would be as numerous as the sands on the seashore. But they became impatient, took matters into their own hands. It takes 10 chapters in the Bible, representing a period of nearly 40 years, for Abraham to do the right thing and obey God. This decision to do things their way resulted in the chaos and confusion of 2 conflicted peoples who have never, ever settled their differences. Yet one of those peoples has embraced Abraham as their father. A do-over for him. And we have the rich history that has comprised our background, the story of the 2-part Bible, and on to Christianity, which has been the basis of our modern Western world. Even David, a man after God's own heart, broke nearly half the commandments in one rash decision. He murdered one of his most loyal men and married his widow to cover it up. Did God write him off? In Psalm 51, David acknowledges that God can and would give him a second chance. Verse 1, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions." In verse 2, "Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin." When we come to the second covenant, we have the story of Saul, determined to destroy all those who preached and followed the revolutionary teachings of Jesus. He was dramatically shown the error of his ways and was given a new name, Paul, to go along with his do-over that resulted in most of the preserved writings related to the story of Jesus and the expansion of the movement around the Mediterranean area in the first 100 years of the church. We go back to the scriptures we read before, and we see that God indeed is a God of second chances. In 1 Timothy 2:4, he wants everyone to be saved. He's not in the business of writing anyone off. He gives us every opportunity to learn from our past actions, both the errors and the right things that everyone has in their lives. A few weeks ago, we had a guest speaker, Lauren Fredland, who talked about his second chance journey after his wife was diagnosed with dementia. His experience was partly what prompted me to look more closely at how God has always meant for the vast majority of humanity to be saved from eternal destruction, as we read in 2 Peter 3:9. God does not give up on any of us, nor does he give up on our families, our loved ones, our friends, or our acquaintances. When we face trials and hardships in our lives, we sometimes get depressed because we think God isn't giving us the answers we want and we think we need. As I've mentioned before, all around us is a creation filled with just about everything we need to understand how God is working in our lives. We can take an example of a tree. Our new neighbors across the street had about 6 trees in front of their house. One day, someone came with a chainsaw to clean up the tangled mess. There was one tree about 40 feet tall that was hacked away until there was only one branch left sticking up towards the sky at a very awkward angle, asymmetrical. That branch bothered me every time I looked out my window. We often asked among ourselves, are they going to just leave that eyesore the way it is? It was a disaster, a mistake, just like some things in our lives can be. That branch was a witness for over a month before it was finally cut down. We've all seen trees that have been cut off, destroyed, and only a stump remains. And it may bother us that a beautiful tree has been reduced to a decaying stump. But what happens if you go back to the same stump months or maybe even years later? In many cases, there's a new sprout reaching up towards the light. A chance for regrowth, change, a new beginning. A second chance at life. When we first felt the calling to this new way of life, and for many of us here, it's been close to half a century, and in some cases even more, we were being given a second chance to right the mistakes of the past and begin living a new chapter in the way of love. All we had to do was acknowledge that we needed a do-over and ask the Creator for forgiveness and help to turn things around. He was more than willing to give us a second chance. Why then would we sometimes question which things are forgivable and which are sealed up and closed off, written in stone, never to be repented of? When we take it upon ourselves to determine what is forgivable, we limit the presence and the work of God that others should be able to see in us. In baptism, we yielded ourselves into God's hands to follow His leading. Can we now turn around and tell Him we know more than He does about what can be forgiven and what we must carry forever as baggage? When I worked for the Calgary Board of Education, in three of the schools I worked at, one of my jobs was to be a go-to for students who needed someone to just listen to them when they became overwhelmed. There were students who had low self-esteem and were the unpopular kids. And there are always way, way too many of them. Students who were in government care, taken from their parents for a variety of reasons. Students whose parents were in the midst of divorce or legal actions. Students who had suffered death of a parent or sibling and were trying to cope with re-entry into school. In all cases, they had gone through the professional avenues and just needed a time out to cry or to talk. One of the most heart-wrenching things about every one of those children was that they didn't know how to cope with uncertainty. Their minds were filled with, how can I? What will I? Or when will I? I could have just listened to them if they hadn't asked me any questions. However, after they had voiced whatever was bothering them at the time and began asking questions, I tried to get them to see that there are certain things that they had no control over. One thing I tried to get them to do was to separate out the most pressing and important things to be discussed, maybe even several times. And then there were the less important things that didn't need to weigh them down. I used to tell them to imagine there was a garbage bag close by. Put those less important things into the garbage bag and leave them behind when they left the room. Years later, students still mentioned how much that had helped them. I used that method because it was something I had learned when I first started my journey with Worldwide Church of God. It may have been in a sermon or in the old correspondence course, but we were told to take everything to God in prayer. And when we got up off our knees, we were to leave all the cares with Him, to be dealt with as He saw fit. We didn't have to worry about them anymore. We didn't have to carry around all that heavy baggage that had comprised our past. We could put it into God's hands and forget it. How is that working for you now? Do you still regurgitate things that have been repented of long ago as if they're vital to our Christian lives today? Can we not just leave and let God? He says He forgives and forgets. Talking about the restoration of Israel, we pick up the last part of Jeremiah 31:34. For I will forgive their wickedness and remember their sins no more. God is able to forgive and forget. As humans, to forget is almost impossible. In fact, we take great pleasure in sharing our past experiences, like I just did, remembering things from our childhood. This sometimes hinders us from forgetting things we have repented of and should have left behind. Or if we've been badly hurt by someone, sometimes we may have said we've forgiven them and moved on, but we are still angry and upset because they hurt us. I've talked before about the bitterness I've heard when talking to people. They carry things with them that weighs them down when there's no need for it. We are always free to make a choice to put away the anger and hurt and truly forgive. We have second, third, and fourth chances all lined up and just waiting for whenever we need them. The moving finger may have writ things that we think are too horrendous to be forgiven, but our God of second chances can erase all and everything, even those things that we consider to be writ in stone.